Roger Skibina substituting this afternoon for Lyle Vann. Our next news as it happens, next scheduled news at 4:30 with Lester Smith, right here over WOR New York. It's 4:15. Ain't it great? It's Friday. Right, Bob? Right, Ray?
Right, Roger. Right, Skibinas. And hello again, everybody. We greet you from Studio 2. And we miss Roger. We don't get to see him when he does that news.
Had a little schedule reshuffling for an indeterminate period, yeah. Not too long, I guess.
It's way down the hall, and we can only see him through. We have a series of mirrors constructed here through the door, out the hall, where we can just peek around the corner and watch.
It's funny thing, you have to wave the opposite direction, which he really is.
But he's waving back now. And Roger will be back at 6 o'clock.
We'll see him, right?
Hardly wait.
We'll see John Scott at 5 and Lester Smith 4:30. Let's have our Dining Out Friday feature.
Righto, Dining Out with Bob and Ray, the informative feature that helps guide you to some of the lesser known but truly outstanding restaurants around New York and around the world. Bob, I believe your adventure in dining out this week took you to a new and unusual French cafe right here in Manhattan.
It did, as a matter of fact, Ray. I had an evening full of surprises at Marcel's by the Sea, which just opened recently over on West 83rd Street.
Well, I think that one of the biggest surprises would be finding a restaurant on West 83rd called Marcel's by the Sea. There's no sea over in that neighborhood, as I recall.
No, that's true. I asked the owner about that. He had a logical explanation. He said his name isn't really Marcel, so he didn't think calling the place Marcel's by the Sea was any more dishonest than just calling it Marcel's.
No, well, I guess he's lying either way. But apart from that little bit of deceit, what other surprises did you find awaiting you at Marcel's by the Sea?
Well, the most intriguing thing for a person on a limited budget, and I am, is the fact that there are no prices listed on the menu. Besides that, the waiters pretend not to understand English, so you don't have any idea how much your meal costs until you receive the check.
Well, that really does lend a note of excitement to dining out.
It does.
I suppose it's quite possible to receive a check for more money than you're carrying at the time.
Yes, indeed it is. Of course, printing the menu entirely in French means that most patrons don't know what they're ordering, in addition to not knowing how much it costs.
Well, that truly makes for an evening of adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And was the cuisine up to your expectations?
I think so. I'm still not sure whether the thing they brought me was a veal cutlet or a breaded pork chop, but it came complete with canned peas and two slices of bread, price $9.50, and I'd really been terrified that it might have run to more than that, but it didn't.
Well, I don't think $9.50 is bad at all when you consider the fact that Marcel had you completely at his mercy with no prices on the menu.
That's right, except as I mentioned, his name isn't really Marcel. Now, I think our audience would be interested in hearing about the spot you chose to visit this week for our dining out feature.
Well, technically speaking, I didn't dine out this week, Bob. I paid a call on the old Plantation Chicken Takeout in Yonkers.
Oh, yeah.
And as the name implies, you merely buy the food there to take out and eat at home. But I'd heard that the southern atmosphere around the takeout counter makes the whole experience well worthwhile.
Well, we'd all be delighted to learn about a takeout place that has a touch of atmosphere, so why don't you give our listeners some information about it?
All right. That's certainly will be just what I'll do. Now, there are authentic antebellum pork swings hanging from the ceiling for the use of patrons. And there's a recording of crickets chirping that adds a lot to the overall effect. And the girls only turn that recording down when they have to yell out a number that's ready to be picked up.
Well, I imagine the leisurely diner is almost reluctant to pick up his order and leave when the time comes.
Yeah, at least that was surely true in my case. I just gotten into a discussion there on the porch swing. I was sitting there with a fine old gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
He was telling me how how anybody can spot a thoroughbred bloodlines in a Tennessee walking horse.
And I guess he was waiting there for his order, was he?
No, I think he was just a shill employed by the management to lend more atmosphere. I heard him reciting the same exact speech about walking horses to another customer as I was leaving.
Well, even so, it's a nice touch for the owners to provide an old gentleman for you to visit with. What about the quality of the food? Did it meet your usual high standards?
Yeah, each item was attractively put up in a separate cardboard carton, and the whole order was placed inside a large white sack. Of course, I'd ordered chicken breasts and whipped potatoes, and I found when I got home that They'd given me drumsticks and a 2-quart container of gravy with nothing to put it on. But outside of that, I was well pleased.
Well, I think most takeout restaurants make a practice of giving you the wrong order, so that's to be expected. And I suppose we'll both be setting forth once again this coming week in search of more of those little-known but truly first-class dining establishments around town.
Yeah, we still have quite a list of recommended spots to check out. So we'll be reporting back on a few more of them very soon. When once again, it will be time to go dining out with Bob and Ray.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. The story of America's favorite family of the Footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. Yesterday, our friends got their first glimpse inside La Scala Opera House in Milan and were duly impressed as Greg discussed details of Mary and Harry's forthcoming appearance. Now, a short while later, they stand outside La Scala looking for the sightseeing bus, which appears to be nowhere in sight.
Well, I wonder where he went.
Well, I don't know. He said he'd wait for us, but there's no sign of him around. That's sure.
Well, it's such a nice afternoon. Maybe we just... Do you think we could find our way back to the hotel if we walk?
I think I could. Of course, that bus driver drove so fast getting us here, I didn't have time to note the streets or anything. But...
You know, did you ever hear of deja vu?
Of who?
Deja vu.
Oh, you mean thinking you've been someplace before?
I have the feeling I've been here before. Maybe in another life.
In Milan?
Oh, for heaven's sakes, don't start that nonsense.
Well, maybe that would help us find our way back to the hotel. Do you know whether you stayed at the Hotel Raphael or not?
This whole thing looks very familiar to me, so why don't you just let me lead the way,
all right.
Follow me, and I'll direct you right back to the hotel.
Oh, he did have a good instinct for direction, I know
I have that funny feeling I've been here before.
Well, I don't know about that. Which way will we go, then?
You're still wet.
I know it.
Yeah,
I'm
you're
silly,
all wet,
too.
Calvin.
Well, when we get back to the hotel, you can probably change into your, that other rig you have.
Yeah.
Sure, that'll be fine.
What's the
rig? I guess Greg will know enough to realize we're back at the hotel and didn't wait for him, huh?
Oh, he can take a cab anyway. Greg is a big-time operator.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He wouldn't want to be walking along the streets peasant style anyway.
He certainly handled this trip well so far, though. Our accommodations on the SS Bagatelle and our hotel suite, they've all been just beautiful.
And not to forget that we are all signed up to appear in La Traviata.
Yes, that's right. I think we're due to open in not too long a time, either.
I don't know when it is.
Wonder where we'll rehearse. Has Greg mentioned that at all, Mary?
I don't know.
What's that?
Has he mentioned where
not
we might rehearse the opera?
Not to me. Maybe in the hotel.
What is this?
Some kind of street bazaar.
Yeah.
Ooh, wave to them, Mary. I think they're...
That was an American there.
Oh, must have been, yeah.
Rowdies. They're probably from the 7th Fleet.
Well, it could be. You sure you know where we're going, Calvin? Are we going in the right direction?
Don't give it another thought. I know exactly where I'm going. I'm just following my nose by pure instinct. As I say, I've been here before.
Well,
wait a minute.
What?
What's that fellow trying to sell there in that package?
I don't know. Some kind of pasta, maybe?
Yeah. Can we buy some of this stuff as long as we're here?
Well, I suppose so.
Hey, do you accept America money?
And so our friends make their way by foot toward the Hotel Raphael. Or are they headed in the right direction? Be sure and join us on Monday when we'll hear Mary say,
"My pocketbook. Where's my pocketbook?"
That's Monday in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking.
And now, Humlinger Industries, the manufacturing company that always operates with you in mind, presents another thrilling episode in the crime-fighting career of Canfield.
My name is Fats Canfield. I'm known around town as a lover of good food, good wine, and the good life. I'm also known as a person who weighs 400 pounds. But with it all, I maintained a reputation as a shrewd detective. That's why I followed up the other night when an anonymous caller told me to go to Emil's Seafood Grotto. He said I'd find out something very interesting about the Mulford case. So I sat down at a back table and pretended to be reading the menu until a waiter approached me and spoke.
Hey, pal, are you Fats Canfield?
Yes, and I was just considering the rainbow trout amandine, but I'm wondering whether it's fresh. I notice you don't have any other customers in here.
Ah, don't worry about that. I can give you my personal assurance that the rainbow trout is fresh. The only reason we don't have any other customers is because this is Monday night, and the restaurant is closed.
Well, if you're sure it's fresh, I'll give it a try, and also I'll have a double order of potatoes au gratin and a family-sized bowl of stuffed artichokes. Guess that should do it for now.
Yes, sir. Incidentally, don't you even want to ask why we let you in here tonight when the restaurant is closed?
Yes, I thought I might inquire about that after dinner. I always hate to discuss unpleasant matters on an empty stomach, and I have a feeling that's going to be an unpleasant matter.
You bet your life it is. You see, I'm not really a waiter, and that phone call getting you here was just a trick. Actually, I'm going to beat you to a pulp for poking around in the Mulford case. That's why we picked a restaurant that's closed for the day, to avoid having any witnesses. You understand?
I'm afraid so. What you're trying to tell me, in a nice way, is that I'm not going to get my rainbow trout amandine, correct?
You guessed it, Tubby.
Well, what if I picked one of these specials that doesn't have to be prepared to order? Say, the scampi and garlic butter, or the filet of sand dabs.
Sorry, the kitchen's closed. The chef didn't even come in today.
Well, that's no problem. I'm quite handy in the kitchen myself. And I'm sure we could find something out there in the refrigerator. You know, a little seasoning, a little garnish can do wonders for yesterday's leftovers.
There aren't any leftovers from yesterday either. You see, this place has been closed since 1964. That's why the front door was boarded up, and I had to let you in through a back window.
You know, these strange little things are all beginning to form a pattern now, even though I didn't think much of them at the time. The lack of customers, the front door boarded up, the temperature in here hovering around 35. I should have guessed that the place was abandoned, that I'd never get my rainbow trout amandine.
Yeah, you should have guessed that for sure, but it's too late now. So if you'll just be good enough to stand up and take the beating I've been hired to give you...
I really don't know why you should expect me to cooperate. You didn't even bring any breadsticks when you brought the menu.
Buddy, I keep telling you we're closed. We don't have any food. Now stop nagging me about it. And take that! There. I guess that should do it. And you just go right ahead and bleed on the carpet if you want to. As I said, this place has been abandoned for several years anyway. Good night, Chubby.
After he left, I lay there for a long time, just trying to figure out why a good seafood restaurant in this part of town would fail to make a go of it. Maybe the fresh water items weren't boned as well as they should have been. Maybe the sauce béarnaise was just a little flat. Could have been any of a thousand things, and I'd probably never find out which one it really was. So I decided to forget about it and close out another day in the crime-fighting career of Fats Canfield, private investigator.
That's nice.
Excellent. Outstanding.
Wonderful.
These folks are talking about Hanover Trail Steakhouse.
The food is wonderful, the service is wonderful, and the waitresses and everybody who help us wonderful.
I can't recall any place that I've eaten, regardless of the price, where I feel that I've gotten a better piece of beef than I get here.
Steak was excellent. I'm just sorry I'm finished. I'd like to eat it all over again.
Where I work, recommended several people to come out for dinner, and everyone who's come out has enjoyed it.
Our patrons like to spread the good word, and at Hanover Trail, the good word is steak. Tender, juicy USDA choice steak, served with potato, crisp garden salad, and all the rolls and butter you can eat. And you can start with your favorite cocktail. We're open every day from 11:30 a.m. So come to Hanover Trail and cut yourself in on a good thing.
I've eaten in many, many hundreds of places, but this is certainly superior. This is a cut above all of them.
Hanover Trail Steakhouse, a cut above. In Whippany, Ramsey, and Woodbridge, New Jersey.
And now, the American Federation of Sheep Herders, representing 14,000 lonely people just like yourself, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk. A heartwarming story of a girl who endures misfortune because she can't think of anything else to do with it. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is carding wool in the downstairs card room. It's late afternoon, and Sergeant Whitwell, The commander of the village police department's burglary and auto theft division is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, burglary and auto theft division commander Whitwell. I think it's awfully nice of you to stop by every time you're in the neighborhood. I just hope it doesn't start the town gossips to talking about us as a twosome.
Well, I don't think there's any danger of that, Miss Bessinger. People know you're the only crackpot in this part of town who calls the police almost every day, so I'm sure they understand that's why I come here so often.
Well, I certainly hope you're right about that. I have my reputation to think of.
Yes, ma'am, and you're living up to it, I can assure you of that.
Good. I'd hate to think that the same thing was happening to me that happened to my brother Waldo. It always worried him that people in town would get the idea he was a weakling. I've often thought that that's what caused him to become a homicidal maniac. You know, he wanted the young people who graduated in his class at school to think he was just as tough as the rest of them.
Well, most of the people he killed were his former classmates, so that probably caused the ones who were left to be scared to death of him.
Well, I'm sure that was the effect he wanted to achieve. And once he had the whole village gripped in terror, I believe he would have been content to settle down and live quietly. But the police wouldn't leave him alone, give him a chance to go straight. I don't know why you have to badger everyone that way.
Well, we try very hard not to badger law-abiding citizens, Miss Bessinger, but your brother had 17 murder warrants out against him, so we really had to make his case something special.
Yes, I guess it was just Waldo's luck that you chose to use him as an example. I often wondered why you couldn't have picked Howard Huhack instead. He was a fugitive from justice at the same time.
Well, all we wanted Howard for was practicing veterinary medicine without a license. It's not exactly the same as committing 17 murders.
Well, I suppose that depends upon your viewpoint. I remember I had a French poodle at the time, and Howard botched up a clipping job on the little fellow so badly that I wouldn't let him be seen in public for almost 6 months. Well, now, Waldo never did anything as mean as that. He just clobbered his victims with a blunt instrument. Most of them never even knew what hit them.
Well, if you think murder's less serious than a bad clipping job on a poodle, I guess there's nothing I can say to change your mind, but I don't imagine that's what you call me over here to discuss.
No, you're 100% right about that, burglary and auto theft division Commander Whitwell. I've just been in a tizzy all day about the mysterious events that are taking place at Grandma Wanderman's.
Oh, I don't know what could be going on over there. It's mysterious. Grandma Wanderman's visiting her daughter up at the county seat, so nobody's home.
Well, that's the same report I got this morning from the man who delivers bottled grape juice in the neighborhood. But in my opinion, that only made the whole thing even more mysterious. You see, I tried to call Grandma right after breakfast to see if she'd bring over a cup of sugar I wanted to borrow. But whoever answered just told me I had 30 seconds to leave a message, and then hung up. I thought it was Grandma at the time, but if she's not at home, it must have been a burglar.
No, I don't think so, Miss Bessinger. See, Grandma Wanderman has one of those answering machines attached to her phone, so what you probably heard was a recording of her voice.
Oh, by jingo, I believe that would clear up the whole thing, burglary and auto theft division Commander Whitwell. I was almost sure that the voice on the other end was either Grandma Wanderman or Donald Duck. But I guess it could have been Grandma on a recording tape that was, you know, playing too fast. Land sakes. You can't imagine how relieved I am to know that burglars haven't broken in over there and started answering the phone. I suddenly feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk.
Can it be that Edna's freedom from fear of a crime wave in the neighborhood may at last enable her to find true happiness? Or will it only lead to further heartbreak when she realizes that answering machines won't deliver the cup of sugar she wants to borrow? Be sure to join us for the next episode when Edna may be forced to put artificial sweetener on her cornflakes in the gathering dusk.
Okay, now let's see how the traffic's moving along this Friday afternoon. Here's Fred Feldman.
Next news as it happens, next scheduled news this afternoon at 5:30 with Roger Skibinus over WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York. Now more Bob and Ray in Radio New York over WOR New York.
And we're very pleased to have a gentleman in the studio with us now who's come to offer a rebuttal to a recent Bob and Ray editorial that he disagrees with.
Well, actually, Bob is mistaken in saying that we're pleased to have a person here who disagrees with us. What he means is that we're pleased to keep out of trouble with the FCC by granting this clown equal time to answer one of our thought-provoking editorials.
Yeah, that's what I mean. In this case, the rebuttal comes to a recent Bob and Ray editorial in which we expressed the view that a larger percentage of New York's street repair work should be done during the wintertime. We pointed out that fewer tourists are in town during the winter, and tearing up the streets at that time would cause fewer traffic problems. Now, an official of the Weather Bureau, Mr. Burton Huddy, has come forward to disagree with our proposal, so go ahead with your statement, Mr. Huddy.
Thank you. My fellow Americans, fellow New Yorkers, and other friends, the inflammatory statement was recently made by Bob and Ray that fewer tourists are in our city during the winter than at other times of the year. The implication contained in that charge is quite clear, and that's why I want to go on record right now as stating that the Weather Bureau is not to blame in any way for the weather we have here during the winter. I feel it's grossly unfair.
Well, excuse me just a minute, Mr. Huddy. You missed the point we were trying to make in the editorial. We weren't blaming the Weather Bureau for anything. We were talking about street repairs.
Well, look, pal, don't tell me I didn't hear what I thought I heard. You said that fewer tourists are in New York in the wintertime, didn't you?
Yes, but that has nothing to do with the point.
Don't go a long story. Just a simple yes or no.
Well, of course there are fewer tourists here in the winter.
All right. That wasn't a simple yes or no, but I'll accept it. And I suppose you'll also agree that having fewer tourists in town is bad for business, right?
Yeah, I guess it's bad for some kinds of business, but you're going into a whole different aspect of this thing than we ever
Please
intended.
Please don't interrupt. You just keep trying to go into a whole different aspect of this thing that I don't intend to cover. I think the people of New York are entitled to know that this part of the country has bad weather in the wintertime long before my department existed. And to prove that point, let me quote from a letter written in 1692 by a resident of New York to her relatives back in Europe.
Mr. Huddy, our editorial was criticizing city policy on street repair work. You don't have to read any documents written in 1692 about the weather.
Well, I'll just bet you'd like for me to leave without reading this, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would, but only because you're missing
about
the point.
So, but I'm entitled to say what's on my mind, and this letter written in 1692 sums it up nicely.
All right.
Quote.
Okay.
Dear Uncle Winthrop and Aunt Patience, I have just enough time to drop you a line before Lucas gets home from invoicing this week's output of barrel staves at the Cooperage House. Sarah and Stevie were both sent home from school early today.
Mr. Huddy, that has nothing to do with what
we... Yes, it does. You didn't let me get to the part where she tells why Sarah and Stevie were sent home from school early.
We don't care why they were sent home early.
Well, you should. Now, listen to this. The children's teacher was afraid that the snow would get too deep for them to make it through the streets later on. We're still having the same weather that started way back before Christmas. There. How about that? And remember, this was clear back in 1692. So, now what have you got to say?
Not much. What do you think I'm supposed to say?
Well, you're supposed to say that the Weather Bureau isn't responsible for the present situation because our office didn't even exist in 1692.
All right, then I'll say your office isn't responsible for the present situation. You happy now?
Yes. All I wanted you to do was to admit that you made a mistake. Goodbye.
You've been listening to a reply to a Bob and Ray editorial. Speaking was Mr. Burton Huddy of the Weather Bureau. Responsible persons who disagree with Mr. Huddy are entitled to express their views on the air. However, it's hard to imagine any responsible person who would disagree with him, so don't make a fool of yourself by contacting us. Thank
yes,
you.
Especially for not wasting our time while you make a fool of yourself. Thanks.
Stiller and Mira for Lanier Dictating Equipment. Did you get everything?
Two corned beef sandwiches on a hard roll with mustard, cider, coleslaw, and the Felch file.
No, that was a ham and cheese on rye with mayo, hold the pickle, and the Feldman file.
That was yesterday's lunch, boss.
Okay, take a sandwich, then take a memo.
Unwrap it, boss. You're eating the wax paper.
Oh.
Look, I'm tired of smelling like a delicatessen. I haven't gone out to lunch in 6 years.
But I can't get everything done unless I work through lunch.
I'm through being a prisoner in a corned beef castle. You need a pocket secretary so this secretary can go out to eat.
A pocket secretary? What does she eat, breadcrumbs?
Not a secretary. Lanier's pocket dictating machine, the pocket secretary. It uses tiny 60-minute cassettes, weighs only 12 and a half ounces. You could take it out to lunch and it wouldn't eat a thing. Just think, a hot lunch.
A hot lunch. It's been 6 years. Where's the mustard?
It's on your chin, next to the mayo.
Call Lanier Business Products today for a bonus trade-in allowance on your present dictating equipment.
And hi, this This is Sergeant Ben Royster. This is your Army Amateur Hour, and today we're coming to you from the Recreation Hall at Dunsmuir Air Base, home of the famous 239th Motorized. I see our first amateur is approaching the microphone now to compete for the coveted Drill Talent Award, and let's meet Specialist 9th Class Harvey Knapgood. Welcome to the show, Harvey.
Thank you very much, Sergeant. And hi, everybody out there.
Harvey, before you go into your entertainment, I wonder if you'd tell us a little bit about yourself. You're listed here on my card as a specialist 9th class. I didn't know that rank existed.
Well, I think I'm the only one in it, Sergeant. I started out as a specialist 5th class, and I've been demoted 4 times.
Uh-huh.
I'd say that's doing pretty well for a young fellow like me who's only been in the service for about 10 months.
Yes, you're really one in a million, Harv. Now, what talent have you brought to our amateur hour?
I make up songs from the listings in the telephone directory, and I found that I can do it with any names and numbers picked at random. And I don't have to practice ahead of time or anything like that.
Why, I'm sure that's a rare talent, Harvey. And do you sing just the names and phone numbers, or do you work in the addresses, too?
Well, I always get in the street addresses, Sergeant, but sometimes if there's a suburb with a long name that's part of the listing, I have to leave that out so it won't, you know, interrupt the rhythm.
Yeah, well, that's certainly understandable. It says on the card that you've brought a brand-new Chicago telephone book with you today, and you're going to let me pick out a page for you to sing.
That's
is that right?
I'm doing that to prove that this thing, you know, isn't rigged.
Right.
And I can do it with any list of names. So open the directory to any page you want, Sergeant, and I'll take off from there.
All right, Harvey. We'll make it page 2,431 of the Chicago phone directory. Now the stage is yours, Specialist 9th Class, Harvey Knapgood.
Let's see. Shoemaker Walter J. He lives at 1648 West 109th Street. And his phone number is 357-8821. And then there's Shoemaker Winfred L. of 7955 Kedzie Avenue, whose phone number is 322-9171. And look who we have here next. It's Shoemaker Zachary W. And I don't know how to pronounce the name of the street he lives on, so this has got to be the end.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Boy, that was great entertainment, Harvey, and I'm sure it'll make you eligible for the Drill Talent Awards semifinals to be held in the Astrodome late next year. And I see that your next contestant here on your Army Amateur Hour is Lieutenant Warren J. Kleiber.
That's not just plain Lieutenant Soldier, it's Lieutenant General Kleiber.
Oh, yeah, I see all the stars and other junk on your uniform there. Now, what are you going to do to try to entertain us, buddy?
Well, I've spent many years on duty in the Pacific Theater of Operations. So that's given me a chance to study the complete symbolism of the hula. And I'm going to perform that native dance for you now with a full explanation of the gestures.
A man dancing the hula? Where's your grass skirt, fella?
I consider that question uncalled for, Sergeant. And I'm sure you know that officers of my rank don't wear grass skirts to do the hula. And I've already made a note of your name and serial number here,
too. All right, never mind the threats, pal. Let's just get on with your act. Here he is, Lieutenant General Warren Kleiber.
Notice, if you will, that I begin by shuffling my feet quite slowly. That indicates a gentle rain falling on the island. Now, at the same time, I begin moving my hips from side to side. And that symbolizes the rolling waves of the ocean lapping up on the shore. Also, pay attention to what I'm doing with my arms as I beckon you to come ashore on the Golden Beach. Now, I'll show you what I do when the sugar cane is ripening in the field.
No, I don't think we want to see that. Just kill the music, you guys, will you please?
Me before the sugar cane had ripened.
If you think that's why they're upset, it's because you've never seen yourself doing the hula, Max. So go take a hike. And now this is Sergeant Ben Royster bidding you goodbye. Until next time, we'll be coming your way from Fort Poncher, Arkansas, home of the 97th Furniture Reupholstering Battalion. See you there.
There's a secret that we know of. It's a secret recipe. And it's full of famous flavors. One taste and you'll agree.
It takes me 6 tastes, Mr. Parks.
How come?
Because you make little links, sausage rolls, sausage patties, brown Swiss sausage, country style rope, and scrapple.
That's the fact. At Parks, we have a style for every taste because good taste never goes out of style.
I admire your style, Mr. Parks.
I admire your taste, little man.
More Parks sausages, Mom. Please.
Parks beef sausage. Delicious. And now the makers of Einbinder Fly Paper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of 3 generations, invite you to ride with the man of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., we're the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes the gas tank is full, other times it's half empty. Either way, we keep on the lookout for trouble. Another evening, we just pulled over to the curb to observe a citizen when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., turned to me and said...
I wonder why it's so hard to find a pair of black tennis shoes, Sam.
Well, beats me, Ralph R. Kruger Jr. What do you want with a pair of black tennis shoes?
Well, the regulations say we have to wear black shoes on duty, Sam, and... I had to pay almost $30 today for a new pair of leather ones. But, tennis shoes would have been a lot cheaper, but I couldn't find any black ones.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I don't think I've ever seen any black tennis shoes.
I've got a hunch they don't make black ones, Sam. It really frosts me to have to pay $30 just because you can't get tennis shoes in black.
Yeah, I guess it would frost me, too, if I stopped to think about it.
Well, I know it really frosts me, Sam.
Yeah, I think it would frost me, too.
Calling Car 119, Car 119. Investigate a suspected burglary in progress at 6473 East Barrington. Approach with caution, 119.
6473 East Barrington, huh?
That's us, Sam. Let's roll.
Yeah. When we get there, I'll stake out the front entrance while you try to sneak around to the back.
Oh, that's no good, Sam. I can't sneak around to the back wearing these new leather shoes. New shoes always squeak, you know that.
Yeah, I guess I just didn't stop to think of that, Ralph R. Jr. So let's say you stake out the front. I'll try to sneak around to the back.
Well, that's no good either, Sam. I can't get out of the squad car at all without having these new shoes squeak. So you go around to the back, and I'll just sit here with my gun pointed out the car window.
Well, that may not work, Ralph R. Jr. Suppose the house is set way back from the street, and you can't see what's going on from the car window.
That could spell big trouble, all right, Sam. I might even shoot you by mistake instead of the burglar.
Yeah.
Sure hate to shoot my best friend just because it's hard to get black tennis shoes.
Yeah, you know, I hate to say this, Ralph R. Jr., but it's really beginning to frost me about you and those new shoes of yours.
Well, I already told you it's got me frosted, Sam. But what can I do? They just don't seem to make black shoes, you know, and tennis shoes.
Yeah, I know. That's right. They don't make them. I've never seen them anymore.
Carolyn 19. Disregard that call to investigate a burglary in progress at East Barrington. The case has been handled by the man of squad car 208. The suspect has been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial.
And while we wait to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's a heartfelt appeal from the makers of Einbinder Flypaper. Friends, we're all being asked to help out in the battle to stimulate our sagging economy, and the most patriotic contribution you can make is to buy your summer supply of flypaper now rather than wait for warm weather to arrive. You'll be helping more than 300,000 unemployed flypaper workers get back on the job, and you'll also be doing yourself a favor if you ask for genuine Einbinder flypaper, the brand you've gradually grown to trust over the course of 3 generations.
And the suspect in that burglary on East Barrington proved he resided in the house he was reported to be burglarizing. Therefore, the charge against him was reduced to petty larceny, and he's now serving his term in the state reformatory at Chino.
So another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night.
We love M&M chocolate candies, plain or peanuts grand, 'cause the milk chocolate melts in your mouth, not in your hand. not in your hand. It's a great chocolate for traveling all through the land. 'Cause the milk chocolate melts in your mouth, not in your hand. Not in your hand.
Next time you shop, bring home some big bags of M&M's chocolate candies. You get all chocolate centers with M&M's plain chocolate candies, and with M&M's peanut chocolate candies, you get a big roasted crunchy peanut inside the chocolate. Either way, it's still 100% real milk chocolate, and you know how your family loves that.
'Cause the milk chocolate melts in your mouth, not in your hand. Not in your hand.
And there's lots of winter left in the mountains of northern Vermont, and there's lots of great skiable snow on the mountains at Stowe, more than 4 feet. So call the Instant Reservation Service at Stowe, toll-free, 800-451-3260. That's 800-451-3260. And you hear them. Here come the Bob and Ray uniformed guard to officially close and lock the studio door for the weekend.
We want to thank all of our staff for their help this past week. Our producer, director, Bob Tiley, of course. And a special thanks to Pat Simonson for her help during the storm.
Right.
Last Tuesday, was it? And our engineers, Herb Squire, Ed Beatty, Joe Janice, and Jim McInerney.
So have a good weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday at 4:15. Until then, this is Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
This is WOR New York, an RKO general station.